Hey folks, thanks for tuning in to the BAMF podcast on this Cinco de Mayo Sunday. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and here is our contractually obligated intro music. I swear it's here somewhere. Hang on. And that's a slightly abbreviated musical montage assures you, gentle viewer, that this is the high quality, high production value podcast. Only the finest ethically sourced geeky conversation for your podcast listening pleasure.
The other shows, it's just a bunch of guys humming.
It's just a theme.
We have actual public domain music here.
Yeah. Other guys just have some hobo they get at Home Depot to, you know, the cash and hand line. They bring up antique beatboxes. It's embarrassing. But not us. No, we
here you have me.
And today we are talking about horror science fiction, a delightful blending of two genres. What they talk about is Craig Campbell of Nerdburger Games. How are you doing, Craig?
Pretty good.
Craig is running a Kickstarter right now. For anyone watching, right below Craig, you will notice a little banner. It says tinyurl.com/hypersleepterm. That's for Craig's newest project, Hypersleep Terminated, which is, coincidentally, a horror science project. You can check it out. He has funded like over 500%, and he's knocking down stretch goals. So good time to jump on the bandwagon. Over here, to my right, and the great much great, is Mr. Christopher McLaughlin, who is the head pit boss at Ghost Show Press, a lovely fellow who publishes movie criticism that you can pick up. We're expanding to Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now. We're on DriveThruRPG. We've got two books there in front of you, Fantastic Flops and Subversive Sci-Fi. Just jam-packed full of interesting and insightful essays about different movies that maybe you've missed. And our first book in that line was called Transgressive Horror, which seems like a perfect fit since it's a horror-themed podcast tonight.
Yeah, it is proven that you could use either of these separately or together to stun a cheetah if you're being chased by. Good, sturdy books full of witty and insightful commentary, and they may save your life.
It's all in the reflexes with the cheetah. I am making no guarantees. But but hey, let's talk sci-fi horror. Since it's been a while since we have seen you, Craig, you get to go first.
Oh, boy.
Ask you for your favorite one or two sci-fi horror movies. What would you talk about?
There's so many to choose from. I think I'll give you two, one that's relatively recent and one that's kind of the classics. I still to this day really love Alien, as it's science fiction set, revolving around an alien creature. Something that at the time we had never seen anything like in filmdom, not quite to that level of that particular imagination. It's a movie that's kind of got a lot of layers to it. It's not strictly just a scare you kind of horror movie, but it's basically kind of a ghost story set in a spaceship, where you know, like trapped in a haunted house kind of thing, where it's not really a ghost, but like more like haunted house is what I'm getting at. And it's it gets into, you know, themes of body horror and violation by something that you can't control. A movie that I really enjoyed, and I've only seen it the one time, but I have to watch it again. That I really did enjoy from the last few years is Color Out of Space, which is an H.P. Lovecraft translation, starring Nicolas Cage, actually, but not in one of his more Nicolas Cagey kind of roles of late. And it's very much body horror, but it has a science fiction, and like something came from space, and it's this weird thing that we can't completely comprehend, and it's really out there, because it's the suggestion in the movie and in the story is that it's a color. It's just this color that doesn't exist anywhere else. It's so bizarre and strange, and it messes with your mind and messes with reality, and it does all these crazy things. So those are my two, like off the top of my head, but I could talk about all sorts of ones.
I'm going to see that the Nicolas Cage movie you mentioned. Cage is doing an interesting thing in this late part of his career. He's got I mean, he still makes movies that are very much Nicolas Cage, but then like Mandy and The Color Out of Space and a few others. Like, it's interesting. It's almost like he's paying the bills with the cheesy stuff. Then he still sneaks in a passion project here and there. Chris, what do you think about that? I'm sure you have opinions about Mr. Cage.
Well, I was very, very blessed. I got to see Color Out of Space on a big screen. It was like the second to last movie that I saw in a theater before COVID shut everything down. And it was great. I went with a couple of like real like stone Lovecraft fans, like Hal Mangold, who actually publishes books on Lovecraft and stuff like that. And I'm probably the least Lovecraft person that ever worked in the role playing game industry, but I really enjoyed it for what it was. But it's like a month after I saw it and really enjoyed it, those horrible stories about director and writer Richard Stanley came out. And I hate to cancel anybody, but it's like I can't rewatch it without thinking about the stories of him beating his girlfriend into unconsciousness and putting her in the hospital. And you know, the ick will have to go away before I can go back to it. But when I saw it, not knowing what I know now, I did thoroughly enjoy it. It was a great night out with the movies.
Nice.
And I appreciate Alien for what it is, but I could accept any praise for it except original, because I'm old enough to remember that they basically stole the plot lock, stock and barrel from It the Terror from Beyond Space. They do a way better job with that same plot, but you know, it's, you know, having grown up with It the Terror from Beyond Space and being 10 years old and watching Alien and going, this is It the Terror from Beyond Space with way better special effects and less 1950s condescension toward women. But I will accept all praise for it other than it being original.
Yeah, I saw a funny thing a while back. Someone had taken Them and Aliens and side by side various shots. And I'm like, well, I had no idea. Of course, I last saw Them when I was like 7 watching it, you know, late night on Channel 4. But they were an awful lot borrowed, you know, even just scene construction. It was kind of interesting stuff.
Well, you know, you know, steal from the best, right?
Steal from the best giant ant movies that you can find. So, Chris, what would you talk about as your top 2 or 3 sci-fi horror films?
Well, normally I'm bad at predicting things because I mean I'm in public education and I'm a book publisher. Clearly, I can't ever see the future coming. You know, I got to thinking about it, and it hit me that, like, despite the fact that we tend to think of them as separate genres, you know, it just seems like science fiction kind of defaults to trying to scare the hell out of you, because technically you can do optimistic science fiction. I mean, as long as you're talking about the future, you're doing science fiction, but it's like nobody likes positive science fiction. You know, I try to think of something science fiction that wasn't designed to scare the hell out of you. And all I could think of was stuff like H.G. Wells' Things to Come, which is just so incredibly doofy and was doofy back in the 1930s when it came out. So it's that says so much about us, about a species. It's like we can't possibly, you know, even if society presents a positive future to us, we can't accept it. We can't embrace it. It just seems silly to us. But out of all the films that are still clearly science fiction, that still I think unnerving, is I gotta speak up for the first two versions of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because those are still creepy AF. But, and to have such significantly different takes on basically the same material, but how both Don Siegel and Philip Kaufman tapped into the things of their different eras that original Jack Finney story homed in on. I just think that is so well done. So both of them.
That's interesting. You say people don't like optimistic science fiction.
Can you think of like something that's recognizable science fiction that's optimistic and people embraced it?
Well, you know what I want to say, right?
What you want to say?
Star Trek.
Star Trek may be the closest thing we have to an exception, but the thing about it is people that aren't intimately wrapped up into it, assume that it's that Star Trek is and always has been this big franchise thing. And it's not. It was these incredibly modestly budgeted TV shows, these little one act morality plays that turned into some successful films as long as they remember they were mid budgeted films. You know, it's done okay. You know, for itself. But I mean, it, you know, if you look at the actual box office numbers of the Trek films, none of them except for the J.J. Abrams abortion that he came up with have ever done like blockbuster numbers. You know, it's like Star Trek. You can't get big numbers out of Star Trek unless you turn it into brainless J.J. Abrams shit. If you do it straight and pure, you're going to have a mid-level success.
And I can't really argue with the box office with you, but fair enough. I would say I feel bad for J.J. Abrams these days because after the last Star Trek Star Wars movie, he seems to be in forced retirement. So, speaking of...
Well, I have pity for the people that have to watch his movies. Let's focus on the real victims here.
Well, we've all kind of discovered that the idea of the mystery box is a bust, and like most of the time, he didn't know what was in the box in the first place. So,
that sums up my thoughts on that very well.
As the descendant of grifting hillbilly carny folk, I represent trying to which shell is it under? I recognize that.
So, what do we think about Event Horizon? Because that always pops into my head as like, oh, hey, Jacob jumps in saying Abrams is a middling storyteller at best. That's why they don't want to make any more movies right now, Jacob. He's, like I said, he's basically in forced retirement. I think he might be doing script doctoring or something.
Jacob is this incredibly talented big teddy bear of a guy, and he's always so positive and supportive. When you can actually find something that Jacob will actually throw a little shade at, it's like you know you've screwed up. And I love Jacob like few human beings.
And
there you go, stamp of approval there for Event Horizon.
Yeah, I mean,
I could not do better than a recommendation from Jacob there.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid. But again, it falls into McGee's, you know, like it's intended to scare the bejesus out of you. We're getting away a little bit from the horror thing. We can by all means get back to that, but I think, you know, like would you regard Close Encounters to be a largely an optimistic science fiction movie?
I think
there's things that scare you along the way because you don't know what's going on. There's like.
I think it's strange, and you don't know why
Richard Dreyfuss is doing some of the things he's doing, so it's a little unsettling. But it's largely optimistic,
except for the guy abandoning his family.
Well, I mean, you got to take that with a Spielberg movie. There's always going to be a screwed up family and a screwed up father, kind of relationship with kids, with the exception of the father is actually a good father. Most of the time there's a messed up father situation.
Yeah, but I mean it's hard to draw much optimism when your main character is, I mean, I've been in the classroom for 29 years. Dreyfuss is the kind of guy that I usually have to refer to social services. You know, it's a little darker for me.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on your point of view.
If we're going to stick with Spielberg then, Cocoon. Optimistic sci-fi. A lot of parallels between Close Encounters. You know, people have an encounter with aliens. There's some creepy elements, a little scary, but at the end, it's, you know.
Well, one of them does get diabetes.
Yeah, but that you didn't get that from the movie.
God, I hope not. Now, that would be scary. Yeah.
Flight of the Navigator, although, I mean, the beginning of that movie can be awfully dark. And having people
I remember that being out of theaters by the time that I got the Starlog issue that hyped it. I just kind of felt bad for it.
The special effects were kind of what they really marketed that on. And, you know, this kid jumps on an alien spaceship, and Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens, is the voice of the spaceship. And, you know, there's time dilation. By the time he gets home, his little brother's a big brother. And he's gone from, you know, the 70s to the 80s. And, you know, it's very, you know, there's a lot of culture shock, you know, a la Captain America, Man Out of Time, But I don't know. If we haven't seen, I guess we can talk about that. But all right, so we've got Alien. We have Aliens. Chris, you had Body Snatchers. Mm-hmm. And I brought in Event Horizon because that pops in my head as a classic sci-fi horror. I sort of feel like it was kind of pointing towards Lovecraftian sort of mythos stuff, but like, you know, the same way, you know, flavored water kind of, you know, points towards strawberries or blueberries. You know, you feel like quietly, but it doesn't really embrace it wholly. I don't know. That's my nitpick about that. Otherwise, I would go with The Thing. The Thing I would almost say is more just pure horror. You know, it's just a monster movie. And the sci-fi element.
You're talking about the remake, right?
Kurt Russell. Yeah.
Oh, the remake. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I'm only 52. I haven't seen the original. What?
The original is amazing. It's Howard Hawks.
Well, yeah.
It's a plant monster.
Fair enough.
I think I read something. Is this accurate? I think I read something at some point that The Thing, the original Howard Hawks, was not necessarily unique, but it was noteworthy for the time in that so many movies of the era were made very much like stage plays, where, you know, you had framed it with, you had characters and everybody kind of had their space in the frame and they talked one at a time. Whereas like in The Thing, there's characters, they're like, there's jammed, the shots are jammed full of characters and they're talking over each other. And it's very, and it was intended at the time to be like, make things unsettling by like, this is a mode of filmmaking that the viewer is not used to. We're used to hearing this person talks, then this person responds. And they use filmmaking techniques to actually make it unsettling.
Yeah, that's Hawk's signature. And that's why a lot of people suspect that he actually directed it, despite what the credits on screen say.
Sure.
But it's amazing. And it really was the first time that you really saw an invader that wasn't either like the sillier serial Flash Gordon type stuff, or the at least somewhat benevolent ones like Klaatu from Day the Earth Stood Still. You know, this was the first time to do a serious space monster movie. And you know, with the talent of Hawks and the crew that he put together, it still holds up for me. I still love that one.
I've seen it just the once, but, and it's been quite a while, but I recall enjoying it. It was, you know, it's older. It's got a bit of a different pace to it. Like, that's one of the things that you run into with mm-hmm. checking out movies from different eras. Like, you have to be prepared for oftentimes a slower pace than what you're used to in mm-hmm. modern cinema. But for certain types of movies, that works really well because it allows that space to really breathe. And you can kind of mm-hmm. just get in the zone of like, oh, this is like, things are going poorly for these people. and how much more poorly is it going to go?
Yeah, cool. I think Jacob has a good point about Annihilation. And right with that, I would probably put on The Quiet Place, which once again, sci-fi theme, but more of a, I think more of a straight up horror movie. Jacob, you could have just been a co-host. You just want to jump up. Life Force is pretty underrated as a, yeah, I always remember that movie just because they had pictures of it in Starlog in 1981. And that, well, if you've seen the movie, I guess you know what I'm inferring here. But yes, the space vampire movie. That,
Life Force has my favorite chase sequence in it because it involves a person running through a door and then running down a corridor, and then he goes through a door and then he runs down a corridor, and then he goes through a door and then he runs down a corridor, and then he goes through a door and then he runs down a corridor.
So kind of an M.C. Escher.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure it's not that long of a sequence, but it feels really long because it's literally just a person constantly running through doors and down corridors. And it doesn't have the excitement of Scooby-Doo running down corridors and through doors, because at least that they showed you the monster when that was happening.
And Jacob is correct in his comment here about Matilda May. Jacob, you really should be a co-host. Let me know. I'll send you the link, man. You can jump on. You know, part of me wanted to be a smartass and say that, you know, Passengers from 2017 with Chris Pratt, it's kind of on theme for your game, Hypersleep Terminated, because that movie is literally about hypersleep being terminated. But also, I mean, if you frame it a little different way, you're a lady hoping to go to this planet. You got your whole life planned out ahead of you. And then some himbo, you know, breaks into your hypersleep pod because he's lonely. That could be framed as a very terrifying movie, but they, you know, they play it as a romantic thriller. But
they hit on the aspects of her being really upset with him for a time, but it's like a speed bump on the way to the rest of the story. Mm-hmm. That could have been one of those movies that just changes lanes completely right in the middle of the movie. It could have been one movie for 45 minutes and a completely different movie for 45 minutes. I do enjoy those.
Well, what do you have?
They do that a lot with horror movies. Like Psycho does that. It becomes a completely different movie halfway through. Mm-hmm. You know, From Dusk Till Dawn starts out as one type of movie, becomes a completely different movie.
Takes a hard left turn, yeah. Chris, I saw you grab a book. I sense you're wanting to share something, so put you on the
later. If you're going to talk about Passengers, I have to give major credit to my indispensable editor, writer, Spike Jones, who wrote about it in Subversive Sci-Fi and came up with the "In Space, No One Can Hear You" good consent, which I think is just a great, great title. So, yeah. I have a very low tolerance for the word problematic these days, but Spike did a great job of explaining why sometimes it's totally justified.
You guys remember the Anne Hathaway movie Colossal, where she's a secret kaiju? You guys didn't watch this movie, did you?
This is crazy because Melissa F. Olson wrote about Colossal in the exact same book, and the whole take of her essay is how like a month after it came out, nobody remembered that film existed. that's literally the thesis of her essay.
I fall into that realm. I don't believe I've ever heard of this. I have no memory of it.
It really shouldn't have been made as a Hollywood blockbuster with Anne Hathaway and whoever the actor who played Ted Lasso's real name is. But they did, but it's a lot more like an experimental play. You see at a college theater with like 50 seats. You know, this girl moves back to her hometown, starts a relationship with this guy she thinks is really nice, and finds out that when she goes to this certain playground at a certain time of night when she's really drunk, she becomes a kaiju. You know, she just moves around, but the next morning she watches the news, and this kaiju in South Korea is rampaging the same way she was through the streets of Seoul. It's a deeply strange idea. It really should have been made into a blockbuster, but it was. But yeah, just a lot of the, you know, tension of that came from the guy she met back home wasn't that great of a guy. And I guess it wasn't really a horror movie, so it's off subject. And Jacob, my virtual co-host, has a comment. Let's go to him. Jacob, save me. The hidden, very underrated sci-fi. This is my Jacob voice. The hidden, very underrated sci-fi horror, though it may just be considered regular sci-fi. It shares qualities of a TV show. Something is out there. I'm not familiar with The Hidden. Are you guys?
I saw it on VHS. I need a nap.
The name sounds vaguely familiar, but then again, so does, you know, there are many horror movies that are the something, you know, the with a word that makes you go,
Yeah, the killer alien can hop bodies. So,
you know, there's a Star Trek sci-fi horror movie, First Contact. And it's sort of this weird mix of, you've got the optimistic Star Trek stuff where it's Zane Cochran building the first warp engine to connect with the Vulcans. Meanwhile, they're basically doing Die Hard with the Borg and all the associated body horror back up on the Enterprise.
Well, you know, I got my ass fired off a podcast for suggesting things like this. But to me, the thing about that I was always talking about First Contact is, it's the most Deep Space Nine thing that Next Gen ever did. And it's like, if you sit down and break down the plot, you kind of wonder why this wasn't one for the Deep Space Nine cast, because they did a whole other episode where Picard basically buries all his Borg trauma, but it comes back for this film because they need it, when that would have made so much more sense for Sisko. It's a war story, which Deep Space Nine did so much better than any of the other Treks.
They desperately wanted the Borg on the big screen, is what it came down to.
Yeah.
And then when it was all said and done, it was just like another Borg episode. Yeah. Like, the Borg stuff is the least I find, honestly, the Zefram Cochrane stuff to be the more interesting part of the story. The Borg stuff never gets, other than like, okay, well, the Queen gets a little creepy when she's like writhing around with like she's just a, you know, shoulders and a spine. Mm-hmm. But there's very little about the Borg. Like, at that point, the Borg had lost their luster, like the body horror side of it. Like they never really went for it, because it's still Star Trek. Yeah. The Borg as a concept could be really unsettling.
Yeah. You can't be scary once the Voyager crew outsmarts you.
That's fair. Yeah. I don't know the behind the scenes stuff. I do know there were a couple of Deep Space Nine actors who said, "I'm never coming back to play this role again." So that might have been what happened there, or maybe they just wanted to. Maybe...
Well, there was some production at the time. That would have been the biggest obstacle. Was they were still cranking out weekly shows.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. So, well, hey, I promised we were going to pivot about 20 minutes in. We're 25 minutes in, so I am late on the pivot. Let me say the URL once again before we get too far and I forget to hype. tinyurl.com/hypersleepterm takes you to Craig's latest game. Craig makes good games. I've got several of them on my shelf behind me back here. I like a lot of his stuff. Let's talk about the tape sorter, Craig.
Sure. Yeah, Hypersleep Terminated is a GM-less, kind of relatively short play, essentially zero prep. Assuming you know the rules, it is a zero prep game where you are you're all portraying characters in a like a kind of big sci-fi space disaster movie. You know, some of you are going to die. And when you get killed off, eaten by an alien or whatever, you become a producer on the movie. So you still have things to do that you can, manipulate and, interact with the story as it goes forward until you tell the whole story. And it plays out in like 2 or 3 hours, depending on how many players you have. This pivot brought to you by Hypersleep Terminated. If you're familiar, with a previous game of mine called Die Laughing, which is like the horror comedy version of this, where it's like you're all just going to get killed, you know, in a funny way by a horror monster. This uses the same core game mechanic, but it's expanded out a little bit to have where in the horror game you're just getting killed, like it's just about eliminating characters right down to the end until you have the one survivor, right? And then in this there are win conditions that are built in where you have threats to overcome. And if you can at some point you hopefully will overcome enough of the threats to get to the final threat and defeat that. And then whatever characters are left at that point are saving the day. So it's intended to, you know, kind of sort of replicate disaster movies where, you know, like particularly space and sci-fi disaster movies where, you know, some characters die along the way, but in the end there's like a couple that make it out.
Okay. And just to emphasize something, I mean, it's a role-playing game, but also once your character dies, you become a producer on the movie. So you can still exert some influence on what's happening on screen, as it were.
Yep. You can decide, like if one character's not in a scene in a particular one, you can, as a producer, spend a producer point to be like, no, your character is testing really well with audiences. You need to get in there so that you need to be in this scene no matter what. And that puts you in the position of having to make a check and potentially losing dice. And it's a dice pool system that as you go, you lose dice and lose dice. And if you run out of dice, your character dies.
Chris, you know, I hadn't realized that the game had this framing structure. Like I say, this sounds like this is right up your alley. It's a game about making movies. You're looking at me funny. Okay. Sorry. But all right, well, hey, this looks like fun. I like the art in here, and I see a lot of J.E. Shields art. He's a friend.
It's J.E. Shields stuff that's been colored to kind of keep with the black, white, and red color scheme. Die Laughing does the same thing, where it's black, white, and red. In that one, because it's a horror game, all the red is blood, and in this one, all the red is not always, but a lot of times it's like an alert screen or like a dangerous thing or.
Foreshadowing or foreboding things, bad things are going to happen. Well, this looks like fun. How's the playtesting gone for this?
Playtesting went really well. I ran it, facilitated it and played the character a few times myself. I had it out with a bunch of different groups. There were some tweaks here and there to kind of figure out, like, to make sure we had the right balance of the number of threats that you had to overcome and the target numbers that were associated with those threats versus how many players you had to make it work, you know, kind of fairly well for 4 to 6 players. Like it doesn't really work for 3. That's too few characters to make it all happen. But like 4 to 6 is kind of the sweet spot for the game. And it plays pretty quickly and there's no GM. So everybody's playing.
Okay, cool. How long does an average session last?
2 or 3 hours.
Okay. And it looks like if folks wanted to get in on Die Laughing, or Die Laughinger, which is Die Laughing 2, they can get discounted copies on this Kickstarter.
Yep. You can get a double feature.
That is awesome. Okay. So your original goal was like 1,500, and you're approaching 7K last time I checked. So
yes. Well done. Well done.
Congratulations, sir. Are we talking stretch goals?
Well, no. For this one, it's pretty tightly put together, and it's everything is ready to go. So in an effort to, like, I've had Kickstarters where, you know, you have to spend some time kind of getting everything else finished up, and there's maybe art and graphics and whatnot layout that has to be done. But for this, it's I went ahead and just took the chance, got it all put together so we can turn it over pretty quickly. So this will fulfill within a few weeks of the Kickstarter ending.
That is the way to do it. I love it when projects do that. Just today I got something in the mail and I'm like, this is a beautiful book. Why is it showing up on my porch? Did I kickstart this?
Because it was that long ago, yeah.
So I like it when they show up soon thereafter. So I, you know, because I'm a 53-year-old man with a feeble memory. So I like it when it, you know, shows up quickly. So, well, this is awesome. You know, Craig, I've been very happy for your success for the last few years. Things have been going really well for Nerdburger Games. So glad to see this continue that pattern. What's next for you guys?
Oh boy. I mean, at this point, it's just like some stuff that's kind of in early stages in the works. Cause I just had a big Kickstarter last year and just fulfilled Capers Cyberpunk. And then this thing happened. So like this, the remainder of this year, like on the public side of it is mostly like convention going and everything. Nerdburger Games will be at Gen Con with a booth. We'll be at PAX Unplugged. I'm doing a couple of local ones around Atlanta where I currently reside. So there's maybe a card game kind of get tinkered around with. There's another game line, like a new game idea, like, and that's, this one will actually be science fiction-y. So I'm getting, there's a lot of build up. There's a lot of like, you know, kind of like, I got to get enough stuff kind of lined up to feel confident to like, okay, now I can start kind of working on the first game. Cause it's, I'm kind of planning for multiple books in the process and trying to figure out, like, assuming the first one does well enough to warrant more, like I want to know where I'm going.
You know, I got to tell you, I talked to a lot of indie press guys. You're like the most organized fellow just talking about his business.
Well, things change up pretty quickly too, because sometimes if you like, I do a thing and it's like, oh, and I want to do a, you know, I'll do a follow-up or a companion book or something to it. And then the Kickstarter doesn't do terribly well. And I'm like, I don't know if it's really worth doing the thing now, because supplements always sell less than the core book. And, you know, when you're very small to begin with, that's a tough call to make. But we'll see.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I have that problem bad. Sometimes I get an idea in my head and I'm like, I have to do a game about space dwarves and asteroid mines. And in my head, there's an incredible blockbuster idea, and it doesn't always materialize when I get it out there. Jacob weighs in, says adventurers usually do well. And so that's... It depends on the adventure. I mean, there's marketing is an art, not a science. I've had some do really well. I've had some, you know, not so much. So
Caper Cyberpunk had a book of adventures with it, and quite a few people got that as well. And so that makes it between the core book, the adventure book, and then there's decks of cards for certain things. That makes for a nice little package of stuff that you can sell online or have at a convention where somebody come up and be like, oh, I'm going to get all the things for this.
Yeah, I love the completists. Every once in a while, someone drops in and like buys everything from a certain game line on my drive-thru store. And I'm like, oh, well, it's not my mom. So thank you, kind stranger.
Yeah, that's the best when it happens at a convention. Like when you can look the person in the eye and they'd be like, "I want one of all of it." I had somebody do that literally. It was a few years ago. It was like right before. It was like one of the last conventions I was at before COVID. So there weren't as many products, but they literally were like, "I will buy one of every single thing on the table." And I was like, that's pretty awesome. Like that feels really, really good. And that happens occasionally with Capers, because there's a number of products for that too, where like at a convention, somebody would be like, I'll just buy everything.
Well, Capers is a fun game. And I mean, you've got I've lost track of how many supplements in different time periods you've covered in that game, but it's quite a few. So,
core book, three supplements, plus the end game book, which is Caper Cyberpunk, which is its own book and has its adventures, and there's cards, and there might be one more thing. I'm gonna ring the last of my Caper's ideas out into a book. I'm thinking into a supplement.
Nice.
The last set of powers that I have kind of in my mind, the last set of alternate rule stuff, supplemental stuff. Yeah.
Well, that'd be cool. You know, I was talking to a guy who was doing a 1980s themed, they can't say Miami Vice, we'll say 1980s themed game. And he had this add-on that was a USB that contained a synthwave soundtrack for his game. And it was shaped like a, you're old guys. You remember those cassette decks we used to have in our cars?
Mm-hmm.
And if it got too funky, sometimes they would all come out like spaghetti and you have to carefully, unthread it and rethread it. But yeah. Like, man, that is cool swag. I wonder how you're making a profit on it. But that is cool swag.
I played back in 2018, 2019. I played in a game at Gen Con that was a Savage Worlds game. And it was this guy that did a different Savage Worlds adventure every year. And he did it. He went through the decades. And for the year that I was there, it was the 80s. And it was all like 80s. Iconic characters from TVs and movies. Like you were playing, like I was playing Sonny Crockett from Miami Vice. And it was a monster thing, but it was Sonny Crockett. And then there were other people, other characters. And he gave everybody a CD, like a mix CD of 80s movie themes and TV show theme songs and everything. And I listened to it on the way home in the car.
That's pretty cool. That almost sounds like Carl Kiesler. I know he used to do stuff like that. A lot of props to the cable stuff. Well, hey, we're coming up on 40 minutes. I usually keep these shorter than this, but it's been really nice talking to you guys. One last time, let me throw the URL out there, tinyurl.com/hypersleepterm. You can check it out now. And you've only got a week left, is it?
A week and a half or whatever. It'll be a week from this coming Thursday. It'll wrap up. But if I don't want to read a game book and I want to read a book of criticism and discussion about movies, where would I find such a thing?
Well, that's a good question. Chris, can you take that one?
Well, you can go to DriveThruRPG and we Go Show Press. We're under the aegis of Fainting Goat Games, and you can look up our titles: transgressive horror, subversive sci-fi, or fantastic flops. You can look them up by name, or you can just find them by going through Fainting Goat Games. And you can get actual books, you can get PDFs, you can get EPUBs, whatever you want to read, we'll make it happen for you. And thank you for asking. That's very kind of you, sir.
Sure.
Appreciate bringing that back. And if you want to follow Ghost Show Press, I imagine there are links to the books on this page, facebook.com/ghostshowboss.
Yes. Pictures of the holes in my roof that these books help mend.
nice. All right, fellas, been a pleasure talking to you. And hey, wait, one more comment. Is it from Jacob? I bet you it's from Jacob. No gratuitous barbarian fantasy. I don't have any gratuitous barbarian fantasy.
Well, it depends if it's going to be in the avocado jungles of death. if you know, you know.
Oh, I'm curious.
Just look up, in quotes, avocado jungle of death.
I will open up. I'll open it in the incognito browser for that purpose.
Make sure your kid's in bed first.
Yeah. That's always a challenge. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. Please check out Ghost Show Press. Quick link, facebook.com/ghostshowboss. Check out Craig's game, tinyurl.com/hypersleepterm. 10 days on that. And we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast. Jacob, just be a co-host next time, okay?